This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. St Martin within Ludgate. Easy to miss as you walk up Ludgate Hill towards St Paul's Cathedral. It's on the left-hand side. But do stop and go in, and you'll find one of the least spoiled of Christopher Wren's churches. As you're about to find out, its uses are many and varied. To learn more about it, I spoke to Tony Tucker from the Friends of the City Churches, Reverend Stephen Platten, the Vicar of the Guild Church, and Aaron Chan, who's the minister for the church who uses the building on a Sunday. They're the Elim Full Gospel Chinese Church. But first, who was St Martin? Reverend Stephen told me.
St Martin was from the, well, what we would now call the Dark Age, the early medieval times, a Frenchman who had been a soldier and then who converted to Christianity. The most famous story of him is of him tearing his cloak in half and giving a piece to a beggar.
And this is the only church dedicated to St Martin in the City of London. By the altar, there's a painting of St Martin, and this painting is flanked on either side by one of Pope Gregory and one of St Mary Magdalene. A long time ago, and now long gone, two churches dedicated to St Gregory and to Mary Magdalene stood near this church, so it's appropriate that they're shown in this triptych. But while the other two churches fell by the wayside, St Martin's Church has survived. Here is its story.
Well, I think I'd say it is one of the really interesting churches in the City of London. I mean, everyone would say that about their own church, but I suppose the most fascinating thing about this church is that although this building is 17th century, rebuilt after the fire, as indeed so many were, it's on the site of a medieval church. And one of the remarkable things is that if one goes down into the crypt on that side, which is a perilous journey, and you have a torch with you, you can go along to the east end of the building, west end of the building, and you can see the 17th century bricks of this new church sitting on top of the Roman wall of London. So there is an enormous amount of history to the place, and of course it was almost of one piece with the Lud Gate, which was the western gateway going up to what we now call Fleet Street. When I went down there, it was the first time to the crypt, I mean, it almost made the hairs on the back of your neck stand on end. You were seeing these Roman bricks and these, you know, and you, this was part of the history of this amazing city.
Yeah.
And also part of the spiritual history, if you like.
Can you pick out a feature of the building that you are most fond of and why?
Well, I think I would say this is one of, I think, only three or four churches in the City of London which was designed to say something about what it is by the way the roof and ceiling was set up in that Greek cross. Can you see?
Yes.
With the four columns. So I think that would be where I'd start.
Tony Tucker told me a little bit more about the church building from the inside.
Here we've got a centrally planned church. It's almost exactly square. Almost, you feel it might have had a dome on the top of it, which a couple of similar sized churches have, but this one hasn't. It's got it's built in the shape of a little Greek cross with four little barrel vaulted arms meeting in the centre in a groin vault with four lovely classical columns, composite columns, supporting the ceiling, and a few steps up to the altar, which were inserted by the Victorians. Wren didn't particularly have that. The reredos is interesting. On the left, the Lord's Prayer. In the centre, the Ten Commandments. On the right, the Creed, typical of the Wren churches.
On the south side, there's a sort of an additional bit, almost. And I guess
there's a gallery on the south side, unusually, and the reason for that is that this church is longer north-south than it is east-west. And what Wren's done here very cleverly is he didn't want it to be wider north-south than east-west, so he's turned it into a square by creating a vestibule with a vestry and some other little offices on the south side, on Ludgate Hill, with a gallery above. And that achieves two things. One, it makes the interior of the church square. The other thing is it shields the church from the noise of Ludgate Hill, which was a very busy street in those days as well as today. So it's quite a clever design, and we're in a very small, centrally planned square church.
If Wren were to come back to life and came here, what would he think?
It's one of the original churches. It's one of only half dozen Wren churches that escaped any damage in the war. This one had absolutely no damage, and is pretty original to the Wren period. The Victorians, unfortunately, put in some stained glass windows. I say unfortunately because Wren, of course, liked plain glass. And, of course, the pews, which are not box pews anymore, all city churches have had their pews cut down in the 19th century mostly, but it's still very much as Wren left it. Organ, it's got a nice font and font cover with interesting inscription around the top of the font cover. In Greek, it actually says, cleanse my sins, not only my face. Oh, the other thing about this Greek writing around the top of the font is it's quite... It's half a dozen words, and they're a palindrome. They read exactly the same if you start from the left going right as coming back from the right to the left. So not only does it say, cleanse my sins, not only my face, but it's a palindrome.
How funny.
It's interesting that not a lot of people know that.
Another final thing I want to mention, just it caught my eye as I walked in, is the candelabra.
The chandelier, yeah. I thought you were going to mention that.
Which actually has candles in it, real candles, which look like they've been burned.
And and that's very famous too. That was brought from the church of from a church in St Vincent in the West Indies. No one knows why. It's a stunning piece of work. It's a gold candelabra with several layers of arms with, as you say, candles in them, and it's a fine addition.
It is. It's perfectly right in the middle of the church, hanging down like a pendulum almost. Beautiful.
There's also one of the... there are some bread shelves also on that north side of the church where the bread was left for the poor in olden times, and that's an original... When you went to church, you took bread and anything you didn't need. You left it for those poor people less well off than you, and particularly in... 18th and 19th century, this was the thing to do. So that's another original thing in this church. This church is very old and very original.
Yeah. I've noticed on the back wall it sort of has just standing out. There are various people who are listed here. Obviously the usual Samuel Pepys who crops up. And John Evelyn, another great diarist from that time.
But I love the way the city church is just in the way they all try to claim they've got something by Grinning Gibbons. They all claim they've got an organ that Handel played on. Mind you, that's probably true. But they attach everything. This one says here, the Native American princess Pocahontas. And then you say, is believed to have visited this church. I mean, not buried here, not baptised here, no real
connection.
May well have passed by and looked in. But it's great, isn't it? That's what the city's all about.
Oh, great. Is this a guild church?
It's a guild church. It's not not a parish church anymore. I don't know the exact numbers. Out of 40 churches, or 39 plus the temple church, which is a peculiar and not under the diocese, I think about 22, 23, something like that, are parish churches, and the rest are guild churches.
I think people always think guild must mean, well, it's relating to some particular guild. But actually, most of those churches have had some sort of link with something else. So, for example, there are three or four livery companies that we minister to, the Cutlers just up the road, the Paviors, the Scriveners, and much more recently, our nearest neighbours, the Stationers, of whom I'm one, and we've now opened up a doorway so that what's a most beautiful garden and a wonderful heritage space has now become a cloister. Have you been to the garden here?
I haven't been to the garden. I've been into Stationers Hall a long time ago.
No, but just come and look here. Just
come and have a look.
Quickly have a look.
Oh,
pouring with rain.
That's all right. Isn't that lovely?
Isn't that gorgeous? Just tuck your head out and look on the left there.
That's a 17th century warehouse on the left.
Thank you.
The warehouse is now where the really important archives of the stations company are. And the chap who was our beadle at the time, George Tokefield, after the fire, or during the fire, rescued the majority of really important documents. And also, because we do educational things in here, it's a bit like an Oxford quad too. So I think one of the things I'd say is that guild churches can be used richly for educational and indeed other cultural things, because we're not tied to a parish process. And at least once a year we run a colloquium, a sort of where we get perhaps five people with some sort of scholarly background, each of them to give a 20-minute talk on a subject. Last year we talked about remembering, and the year before we talked about how much we can believe documents and things are real rather than fraudulent. Or so each year we try and choose a different thing. We do have this weekly Eucharist at lunchtime on a Thursday, which it's normally a small number of people, and today there are just four of us in church, but sometimes it'll go up to 6 or 10. It's completely random, really, depending on when people are free. So we continue with that, but we also try and use the church as broadly as we can in different ways.
You mentioned the congregation today was small. Do you feel disheartened by that?
I don't think one does feel disheartened, because after all, I don't think we can expect every church in the city to be packed out every lunchtime. No, we do it because it's important for there to be somewhere where people can stop and pray. And sometimes we get, if you look at our visitors book, the range of people from all over the world is astonishing, because we're in a fantastic position on the way up to St. Paul's Cathedral, and not everyone can afford now to go into St. Paul's Cathedral, and so they come in here.
My name is Aaron Chan, and I'm leading the Chinese Full Gospel Church here in St. Martin within Ludgate. We moved here in the 9 years now. We used to meet at St. Peter near Oxford Street. And most of the people here, they come, they're students. They're the student from China, and Taiwan, Malaysia, or Singapore. They come to UK, to London to study, and then while they study here, and some of them, they are either Christian before they come, they are Christian, or some they come to know Jesus while they're here. They stay in this church for a couple of years until they finish their study and they go back to the motherland.
How do you feel about that?
I feel very sad, because we're close, we're good friends, and almost they treat us like mum and dad, and then it's almost like the seeing your sons and daughters leaving you. It's still so sad. Jesus didn't come to give us an organisation, he gave us a family.
When I come to London, I can't understand the English preaching, so I need to go to the Chinese people church, and I ask my mom. My mom's friend tell me here, and I just want here. When I want here, I feel it's warm and really love here, and I keep every weekend I go.
And I've been coming here 22 years.
Are you the only Westerners?
Yes, we are. We're the only two that come here every week.
And you're mostly drawn to the music?
Yes, and the preaching.
Yeah. And how important is music in this church?
It's important, because most of them are young people. The young people are more tend on the music side. It's a lot more easy to make them feel at home. If it's just purely just preaching, and then probably they just switch off, playing around with their mobile phone. But because they come into worship, enjoying it, that's why it changed the whole atmosphere. And the acoustic is very good as well.
Historically, this is a very important church, old.
Yeah.
How does it feel to bring a very modern church into a very old building?
just great. That's all I can say. It's just good. It's different, but it just seemed to, everything seemed to blend in nicely. That's why we were very grateful that for Church England before they asked to use this building, because they only use it Monday to Friday. That's why it's good that we can use it on Sunday for worship.
This is a very classic British church. The first time I went to this place, just attracted by the building, and then I realized the people here actually are more beautiful than the church.
Is it strange worshipping in Chinese in a very old British building?
Not so strange, because I think we're family, no matter the British, the Africa, the Chinese. So this is a gift from the gods.
We very much see it as, what's the word, a pilgrim's stopping point. Anyone who've come through this great city and they want to stop somewhere for quiet, for solace, to say prayers.
The service that I've just been part of, it has ceremony involved in it. Mm-hmm.
I suppose it would stand very much within the sacramental tradition of the Church of England. I mean, that's a tradition which is part of the whole church, but some churches tend to emphasise that more than others. And it's a church which values, how would you put it, symbolism, yeah. And the mystery of the faith.
More than any other church I have visited on this quest of mine, this one, St Martin within Ludgate, is one of the most peculiar. I witnessed a traditional Church of England service during the week and then stepped inside the same building on a Sunday to experience an all-singing gospel service delivered in Mandarin. From the outside, no one would have a clue.
Most people don't notice this church because it's built in the same plane as the buildings. They walk straight past it. If you go on the other side of the road, you have a feeling for the church, which has wonderful little... If you look at it, that's a marvellous spire with little curlicues all the way up it. Probably based on a church, I think, in Florence. And I don't mean based on that, but inspired. Some of the ideas came from there. You know.
It's beautiful. Stop and take a look at it. And please appreciate it, because it's a miracle to still be here.
One of the other things to say about the building, of course, is that it's one of the very few churches that received no serious impact from the bombing. And if you look at pictures of this part of the city at the end of the war, it's astonishing, because all you can really see is St Paul's Cathedral intact, this building intact, the old railway bridge, which used to go across where the Thames Link now is. And then most of the other buildings are either levelled or just ruinous.